All right. This is Tom Rowe with WGXC, and we are speaking now to the New York State's Committee on Open Government Executive Director, Shoshana Boulay. Did I pronounce that right?
Sure, yes.
How has your job is, I guess, explain first to our listeners what your job is.
Sure. The Committee on Open Government is a statutory independent body that is housed within the Department of State that provides advice and guidance on compliance with New York State's open government laws, specifically the Open Meetings Law, which deals with the meetings held by public entities and local governments and state government entities, and the Freedom of Information Law, which involves information that is public records available to the citizens of not just New York, but of anywhere. We also provide advice and guidance regarding the Personal Privacy Protection Law and how agencies and entities must be complying with the safeguard of that kind of information, as well as the release of that information to people who need it and want it with proper authorization. So our job is to speak with members of the public, members of the media, members of local governments, members of state governments, members of the legislature, about questions they have concerning areas of how to comply with requests under the Freedom of Information Law, requests under the Open Meetings Law, compliance with those laws. We issue written opinions and we issue verbal guidance day in and day out. That's all I do. So that is the job. We have a small group of folks who are staff of the committee, and we have a membership of the committee is half appointed essentially by the administration, some by the legislature, and the committee convenes at least twice a year, but we're hoping for more. Historically, it's met less, but we're going to try to meet more, and we discuss new issues that come up and how we're going to, as a body, as a committee, deal with novel questions of law.
And you just started in January, and then I guess March 7th, the governor issued an executive order and changed all the rules. So you only had like 2 months of one set of rules, and then things with, as far as the open meetings changed, right?
That's right. I came in January. My first day was early in January, the 8th. And less than 2 months later, I was out of the office, working all of these issues from home, hundreds of telephone calls and communications about how to comply with both the executive orders and the mandate for public health and the open government laws. Tricky. But possible.
And so towns and villages are still mandated to have open meetings, but what are the different ways they can do that, or what's the difference now?
Well, essentially, if a town or any public entity, as that term is defined in the law, has a meeting involving a quorum of its membership, which is essentially a majority, they have to have it in a particular way. Prior to the governor's executive orders, there were two ways to do that, either physically gathered together or gathered together by video conference between two or three locations, each of which locations must be open to the public for the public to attend, or solely by video conference, but again, where the public was able to sit in with the members participating by video with each other. After the governor issued his executive order 202.1 back in March, it appeared to be an option to, instead of meeting in person and having a gathering of people, and again, please remember that if you gather people together for a meeting in compliance with the open meetings law, you can't turn people away. So that could result in some cases in pretty large meetings. So I think for that reason, the governor made it an option to meet solely by either video conference or audio conference without providing physical access by the public. This was the big change, so long as your broadcast of the meeting, that is the audio or the video or both, were simulcast at the time that you were holding your meeting so that the public could listen in contemporaneous with the meeting. And the governor also imposed a requirement at that time that the meeting be recorded and that a transcript, verbatim transcript, could be taken and one could then thereafter be requested if it was needed or someone missed the meeting and wanted that to foil that document and have it. So that was the major change that occurred, and it permitted a board to meet solely remotely to protect the public health.
And that strikes a question with me. I just realized that does this cover school boards that as well as towns and villages?
Yes, it does.
So
in the open meetings law, there's a definition of what constitutes a public entity. And so if you look that up, you know, you can read what is considered to be a public body for purposes of the open meetings law. And it's in the definition section. And a public body means any entity for which a quorum is required in order to conduct public business and which consists of two or more members performing a governmental function for the state or for an agency or department of the state or for a public corporation as defined in another section of law, or a committee or subcommittee or other similar body of such public body. So it's very broad. It covers many, many entities.
So I bring this up because the Catskill School Board had I guess they said it was a technical problem recently. They had a meeting that only 100 people could attend virtually online. Other people, individual citizens, then restream that meeting so other people could go in. But that would technically be a violation of the rules, it sounds like.
Well, it, certainly in the beginning, you know, it's difficult for me to hold anybody, any public body at the very beginning of this issue, to account for what would be a good faith attempt to comply with the law and the governor's order. It would appear not to be in compliance with those things. I think in the beginning of this process, people were getting Zoom bombed. There were some actual restrictions on the number of people a platform could actually tolerate before crashing. But yes, you should not artificially restrict the number of folks who can participate by listening to a meeting. So, you know, your Zoom meeting or your WebEx meeting or your go-to meeting or whatever process you are using to hold your meeting should not artificially cap the number of people who can call in. But I do have some sympathy for, in the beginning at least, for sure, for entities that tried really hard. That 101st person that couldn't get in, yeah, that's a problem under the law for sure. And it was a problem under the executive order for sure. I don't know what a court would do when it would query and develop and evaluate those facts. I don't know if there would be a sanction. But in the very beginning of this process, you know, it was my advice to entities holding meetings to try to hold in abeyance essential functions like votes on things that were the expenditure of public monies until such time as they could have a meeting that was inclusive of everyone. Some meetings had to go on and some meetings could be postponed. And I think we'll just have to, you know, hope, and I guess the future will tell us how many meetings went on, you know, in that didn't necessarily have to go on, or that how many essential meetings did occur where not everybody who wanted to listen in could listen in.
Yeah, this was a few weeks ago, so it wasn't right at the beginning, but it was, I think, their first meeting about the reopening of schools, so it was a
popular.
Many more, right, exactly. And
right.
But the private citizen restreaming that meeting, that isn't, that doesn't help the town in terms of legal stance, right? That's great for the public, but it's not the public entity still has the responsibility.
Well, I think that under the governor's executive order, the meeting is supposed to be available while it's happening. A couple things to consider. many of these meetings, especially since we've been holding them remotely, have limited or prevented public participation, not public attendance, public listening, but not everyone has been eager to engage in a public dialogue over Zoom or other remote platforms. So they've simply just said, this is for listening. If you have a comment, you can send it in and we will address it or we will respond to you as we can. So if the meeting went on for how, you know, if this particular school board held a meeting and didn't invite the public to participate during the meeting, but rather just send your comments in, I don't know what harm the person who couldn't listen in live because of the limit will have suffered, but technically that was not, they should have been able to listen in.
Yeah, they might not have known the because it was people restreaming on Facebook, they might not have access to Facebook, or they might not have known where to look. I mean, I didn't find it live, but...
Yeah, certainly not. I mean, look, there's, you know, I think that the open government laws have always required a significant amount of good faith and diligence. And, you know, I guess people succeed, entities succeed in varying degrees. You know, I think a court's going to look for more than a negligent failure to do something correctly.
And I think it's people don't understand that the towns and villages and all government bodies don't have to let the public comment. Is that right or is that incorrect?
Well, that's correct. There's nothing in the open meetings law that requires that a public body permit comment or participation. It just permits attendance. But again, the committee has long opined and long advised that where an entity does permit public comment, for example, you can stand up at the meeting and during the public comment period and speak for 3 minutes, say. We've long opined that where that is the case, then the body has the obligation to let everybody who wants to have that equal chance. So, you know, under those circumstances, that 101st person might not have had the opportunity to do that, if that opportunity had been available to the other 100. It's hard to know. But those would be, you know, I think indicia or factors that a court might look at to determine whether someone was truly aggrieved.
And that's something the legislature would have to address to change if someone wanted that changed, that mandating public comment.
Sure, yeah. But do recognize that open meetings are different from public hearings. So public hearings, which often are held within an open meeting, so an open meeting is convened and then there's a standard business and then there may be an actual section for a public hearing to occur. Separate statutes and regulations govern the proceedings of public hearings, and during that portion of a meeting, there may be a requirement that the public be permitted to comment and participate. So the open meeting portion, no, the answer is that the legislature would have to act to require that boards or public bodies permit that. But during public hearings, which often occur during open meetings, that those requirements may already be in place.
Hmm. All right. You guys, you or your committee have answered two local queries from the media recently. Let's start in Bern because it's a common question, I guess. People attend meetings and then all of a sudden the board says we're going into executive session where you can't hear or see what we're doing, and that frustrates people. I guess the Bern Town Board recently went into executive session. I think the quote was personnel matters was the reason given, and you wrote back a decision, I think, that said that was not one of the eight official reasons that a board
can...
Go ahead, yeah.
Oh, no, you're right. The words personnel matters do not appear in Section 105 of the Open Meetings Law. Section 105 of the Open Meetings Law gives the enumerated reasons why you may go into an executive session properly called. Generally, what personnel matters means is the medical, financial, credit, or employment history of a particular person or corporation, or matters leading to the appointment, employment, promotion, demotion, discipline, suspension, dismissal, or removal of a particular person or corporation. So that is what should be said rather than personnel matters, but it may be a semantic difference. But I think that the committee staff has opined in the past in a formal issued advisory opinion that saying the words personnel matters are not magic words and they don't immediately confer legitimacy on the calling of an executive session. Better to use the words in the statute and use them specifically. And I would like to an executive session regarding the appointment and or dismissal of a particular person. You don't have to name the person.
And in this case, is there any sanctioning or anything that can happen to a board that violates the mandate to have executive session be under these eight specific things?
Well, that's a tough question. Like all of the open government laws, the open meetings law, the enforcement provision requires a lawsuit brought by the aggrieved party. Very expensive and time-consuming way to go about enforcing something like this. But technically, one could sue to get a determination from a court that the executive session was improperly called. And ultimately, a sanction could be a finding that a vote was taken in violation of the open meetings law. You could get a cost and reasonable attorney's fees. Not clear whether a court would invalidate an action that was taken, but it certainly would take a long time to find out what a court would do.
And this would be under the Article 78 law. That's what the suit would be brought, I guess?
Yes. Under Article 78 of the Civil Practice Law and Rules, an action for declaratory judgment or injunctive relief.
And not on the on specifically open government laws, but towns and villages more often win those Article 78 cases. Is that kind of it's fair to say?
Gosh, it's been a while since I've done a lot of litigating in the Article 78 arena. I know that the standard is very high for an aggrieved person to prevail because deference is given to the expert body, generally speaking, that made a decision. But facts are facts, and a court will not hesitate to find, issue a proper finding on a set of facts that is hard to dispute.
Yeah. So the second local case to us, WGXC actually asked you for an opinion. It was a village of Catskill put out a decision on June 30th. They later said that it was a vote, and then they changed that and said it was a decision. And they put out this determination to not put a Black Lives Matter mural on their main street. They also put out a large statement with many bullet points. And they did not have a meeting on June 30th. They had a meeting on June 24th where they discussed the issue, asked the participants to give them more information, which they said they gave them on the Friday, the June 26th. Didn't have any meetings over the weekend, didn't have any meetings on the fifth Monday or the fifth Tuesday of the month when they released the statement and the decision, as towns do not have meetings on the fifth Monday or Tuesday of the month since they only happen four times a year. Your determination was that, and they later said that the decision was all crafted via email. Your decision opinion you gave to us was that towns are not allowed to take action over email, or am I? I'm probably not describing this. You probably can describe it much better than I did.
That was a very good summary. I think we started off with there are only, setting aside the governor's executive order that permits meetings to be held on platforms like Zoom, so long as they are simulcast, and then later transcribed. There are only two ways to have an open meeting, according to the open meetings law. One is live, and where you take your votes or make your decisions in front of your attendees, or in an executive session, say, where you're not in front of your attendees, but it's happening live, where they're in a different room, maybe making the decision, but then they come back out and tell you what the decision was, or by video conference, where the members of the public are able to come and participate, or attend rather, with each video conference location. So those are the two ways to properly hold a meeting and take decisions with a quorum. Any other gathering of a quorum where you have a decision is, you know, would appear to violate the provisions of the open meetings law. We've had the committee has had occasion in the past to issue an opinion that said a series of email communications among members of a board involving action taken by the board, that meeting would be in contravention of the open meetings law. So query whether that decision was properly taken. That would be something for a court to determine. But it generally is the rule that you can't take an email vote or a majority of decision. I think one of the facts you had given me was that the decision was unanimous, which, you know, I'm gathering means that a quorum of the members who were participating in this email string agreed the action and took a decision on the series of email communications, and then I guess reported on their decision by issuing some public statement about it. Those to me would seem to be decisions that were held in a meeting that was not properly convened, but I guess the court would have to decide that.
And this seems to be akin to, from my understanding, planning boards sometimes have to do site visits to determine things about the planning board issue, but they can't do the site visit as a complete group. They have to do it split up so they don't have a quorum. Is that correct?
Well, that's one way of, you know, avoiding a quorum. Certainly, it's safer to not have a quorum of your public body together in the event that someone could accuse you of discussing the public business together. So that is one way of achieving the goal of not doing that. Because if you're discussing the public business together as a quorum, it should be done in the context of an open meeting only.
Because you'd have to invite the public would have to be invited to the site visit too, if the whole planning board attended.
In theory, it would be a meeting held at the site.
Right. And in this case, because a decision was made, someone could challenge rather than the executive session issue, which is a little more like there's not much of a remedy, but someone could challenge the decision in court, and the court would probably rule that the decision, they'd have to take an actual vote in a public meeting.
That is one thing a court could find. You know, I don't understand why the board, or here the public body, wouldn't just formally convene and re-vote. I think that's probably what would happen if someone threatened to sue them to cure the problem.
Yes. And then I have one final topic to bring up. First I wanted to ask, since the pandemic, do you think these issues are coming up more often or less often? Or are you getting lots of queries about public meetings not being held as openly as possible, or are they actually doing better?
Well, that's a really good question. I think those people who have historically been attendees at their town meetings, they're sort of activist people who are very interested in the business of government, who have made a routine and a habit over a number of years to participate, at least by attending, have had trouble transitioning to this new way of attending that is available now during the, you know, declared disaster emergency. So some of those people have been much more vocal during to me and asking my staff for opinions during this time. But I've actually heard the reverse from a large number of people, both members of public bodies and members of the public, who are much more engaged with their government now that it's easier for them to participate. And by participate, I mean attend. So it used to be if a meeting was held at 6 p.m. on a Wednesday, you know, someone in a town couldn't make it. But now they're able to just tune in from wherever they are. And that's helpful to them. So it is a sword with two edges. There's a lot of folks have indicated that they really prefer being able to participate by attending an open meeting that is being held on something like Zoom. But again, there are folks who feel like the meetings are now less open. And to a certain extent, the number of complaints that I've heard about and misunderstandings about the idea of participating lead me to believe that there are people who used to be able to participate when the meeting was at the town hall and there was an open mic portion, that now there is no open mic portion and they're upset and they think that their rights are being violated, but technically the open meetings law doesn't provide that right. So it's been a busy time. We've got a lot of calls coming in and a lot of requests for clarification and for opinions coming in to make sure, I guess, people are, you know, they're doing their diligence. They want to be clear about what's permitted and what they can and cannot expect in this, you know, sort of strange time that seems to be extended over it's now a long period of time that we've been operating in this mode.
And I think you've just released some sort of statement about what might happen after the governor's executive order goes out of effect. He keeps extending it. I think it's now extended through September 4th.
Yes, the order, Executive Order 202.1, was extended most recently in Executive Order 202.55 through September 4th. So through September 4th, this other method of holding open meetings with simulcast has been extended. What I'm now beginning to get questions about is whether some public bodies may be ready to recommence their essential meetings in person. But, you know, while these executive orders are in place, you know, for example, there's an executive order on masking and on social distancing. All of those things have to be observed during an open meeting as well, if you're holding it in person. So I've been getting a lot of questions about how to thread the needle and comply with everything and all the requirements that are imposed upon public entities in holding these meetings. A lot of requests about hybrid meetings. Can we do some of it in person, but also simulcast it? And, you know, the answer is yes, as long as you're complying with the governor's directives and with the New York State Department of Health guidelines. So it's a topic that is, it's a gift that keeps on giving, because the topic is very complicated and has lots of nooks and crannies for people to need clarification on. So we're doing the best we can to provide clear and sensible advice, but, you know, again, no courts have examined these questions, so we're just filling the gap until such time as litigation really gets started, which I think will probably commence. We'll probably start hearing about some of the people's lawsuits, you know, within the next 6 to 12 months.
So it sounds like the pandemic is like a lot of other people, is giving you more work.
Certainly around this area, a lot of inquiries about how to comply with open meetings and FOIL. You know, FOIL, the governor did not extend or suspend any of the FOIL requirements like he did with the open meetings requirements. So people still have to comply with FOIL. So there's, you know, been a fair amount of questions about what kind of responses to FOIL requests are proper. So yeah, it is, you know, it has created a lot of work, but it's good work. It's work that needs to get done and people need to have the information. So we're, you know, I'm glad to do it and to provide as much guidance as I can.
Well, you gave me the perfect segue to my final question, which was about both creating more work, but not through the pandemic for you, and the FOIL requests. Are you getting more FOIL requests from two police departments about disciplinary actions that since the state recently changed the law to allow requests for those records?
Certainly. I mean, we don't get requests, but we get questions about requests.
I guess what I'm asking, because I've seen reports that the police departments are still not turning over these this information, especially out of New York City, but probably elsewhere.
I think that's probably true. I think that there are a number of lawsuits pending now already, and a couple of judges have recently enjoined those police departments from providing certain types of disciplinary records. So I think they're waiting to figure out what the courts are going to tell them to do. So certainly with respect to New York City and some other jurisdictions, they may be under court orders telling them to hold on. But yeah, it will be, there has certainly been a wave of FOIL requests for various segments of people's discipline files in law enforcement. And I think that many are being responded to and many are being reviewed, and the public entity that has been FOIL'd is, you know, as they are required to do by FOIL, carefully reviewing each page of a record to determine that the rights of access are not barred by any exemption that may apply.
All right. So it sounds like it's a busy time for you. We'll let you get back to doing the people's work at the New York State Committee on Open Government. We've been speaking with Executive Director Shoshana Boulay. Is there anything else you want to mention?
No, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. And anytime you need anything, you just give us a call.